to In Beta, a semi-regular conversation between physiotherapy educators who are interested in curriculum reform, innovation and critical thinking about teaching and learning. My name is Ben Ellis. I'm a lecturer in physiotherapy at Oxford Brookes University in the UK.
And I'm Michael Rowe, a lecturer in the Department of Physiotherapy at the University of the Western Cape in South Africa. In Beta is an international virtual community that's free for anyone to join. You can find us on Google Plus by searching for the In Beta community or using the In Beta hashtag on Twitter. And now, on with the conversation. Before we begin today's conversation, I just want to apologize for the quality of the audio. We had some difficulty with our internet connection while we were recording the conversation, and unfortunately we only realized at the end that the quality was so bad. So please bear with us, and we hope that we won't have this problem again in the future. Jost is from the Hahn University of Applied Science, and I came across Jost through Anestis, who's also just joined us. Welcome, Anestis. We had a conversation with Anestis a little while ago about internationalization, and during that conversation, Anestis suggested that I get in touch with Jost, who's doing some interesting things at Hahn University. Maybe you could spend a little bit of time telling us what you did at your university and why, and then we'll just take it from there.
3 years ago, we created a parallel physiotherapy program at our university. In this program, we rearranged and we rethought some basic facts concerning physiotherapy education. At least, we thought so. We started with the idea that it's the most important part of education is actually the student as a becoming or upcoming physiotherapist is more important than the content, because the student in itself or the upcoming physiotherapist has to be of added value for society and has to trust his own work. So it has to be a kind of a huge level of self-efficacy, self-confidence and physiotherapeutic competencies or capabilities. Based on that line of thought, we came to the conclusion that actually the normal physiotherapy education as we had it might not always be sufficient for students or helping out, as our normal physiotherapy curriculum is mostly involved with normal teaching. Students are involved in classes, so they follow the teacher in their teaching and they follow the assignments. So actually the assignments help them to as a journey toward through their physiotherapy education. What we now did in our experimental group, we thought, let's skip the teaching, let's skip the assignments, so we do it differently. As we said before, the outcome is actually the most important part. So let's focus on the outcome so that we give all the students every semester, we give them the intended outcomes. And if they reach the outcome, they are going on track. So they had the time to dissolve, to discover, to solve the problems, the dilemmas in order to reach those outcomes. We did it because we thought that when we will do actual good teaching, we have to search for the analogy with a patient management. And in patient management, you see kind of the same thing. That's not about the therapist who treats or solves the problems of the patient, but helps the patient to solve his own problems, or at least to help the patient to adapt in a normal sense. So this is the same way what we try to do with our students and help and guide them. So that means also that the students get their own place within university. They have their own rooms, actually, for the whole year. There are 4 teachers present. They can ask teachers for guidance. The teachers provide guidance. The teachers help them with workshops whenever they wanted to. The teachers challenge them and monitor them. And the other part is that they will have the same kind of assessments that all the other students have. So both streams, in this way, by both streams, will have the same kind of assessment.
So just to sum up then, Jost, you said you'd standardized your teaching practices and so that everyone was being taught the same and you were expecting everyone to learn the same. We know that that isn't true, and then you kind of related that to what happens in clinical practice where we have different approaches for different patients, although the outcomes stay the same. And so you kind of set the outcomes as being kind of your standard and say that every student must be able to meet these outcomes, and how they get there is clearly up to them. They make the decisions about how they're going to get there. Is that right, Jost?
It's correct. And I also just wanted to add something else. When we started with practical teaching in the Delta Stream, we used the experiences that we had from previous years. We had before 6 different parallel classes in which we teach those practical skills. And there was always a kind of an argument or discussion between teachers. Shall we focus upon the outcomes, that we all the students reach the same outcomes when doing, for example, a test or an intervention? Or are all the students obliged to do actually the same thing? So one of my colleagues was actually saying, "From we have to do a kind of uniformity in practice skills or in instruction." There started the debate. Both me and another colleague had a question, what if we all perform those tests and those interventions in the way as we do? And then some of my other colleagues said, yeah, but it's not doable because then we don't use it in a consensus way. So we asked them, are we doing it right? Or do we do it wrong? And they said, no, you're not doing it wrong. You're a very good clinician, so you do it right. So we said, from perhaps there are several ways of being right. And they had to agree. So that caused a kind of a dilemma. As within the head of some of my colleagues, they say there's only one way of being right. And now there were several ways of being right within the same system. So that was the reason that we thought, okay, variation is very needed, and everybody agreed upon it. And then we thought, okay, what about teaching styles? Should teaching styles also vary? Because also the students learn in different ways. And actually, we could say there's a kind of an analogy between the relationship between a teacher and a student, and a therapist and a patient. And if this analogy is there, and you use constantly different interactional methods, why not use it in teaching as well? Next to that one, we also thought that actually our students are not students, those are upcoming colleagues. And if we see them as colleagues, it's much easier to work with them and work together and to collaborate in a sort of partnership. So we had several ways of dealing in the same time. So we changed actually the teaching styles towards more instructionals like we use with patients, so it's the patient management, as we said before, and in the same way, we looked upon students as upcoming colleagues. So all the students are now upcoming colleagues, and we work in a professional community. I see some questions coming up in the chat, and I try to answer them, but perhaps before to answer them, I give you a little bit of background about our system. The Han Physiotherapy Program is part of the Faculty of Health. In the physiotherapy program, there are around 800 students, of which there are around 200-220 students who start with physiotherapy every year. They start in August, and they are divided normally in 7 classes. The whole program is 4 years, so 8 semesters after each other. And the whole program is based upon educational units, and every educational unit is closed with an assessment. At this time, the education unit actually closes every time at the end of the semester or at the half of the semester, we call a block. So a semester is divided in 2 blocks. So a year consists of 4 blocks or 2 semesters. That's the kind of the way how it's built upon. Our curriculum, 10 years ago, we changed it from a curriculum which is very content-driven towards more context-driven. So the students moved through certain contextual fields like private practice, hospital, geriatric ward, rehabilitation, all those kind of areas, which is quite common to see so. As the whole education in that time changed towards competency-based education, we also had to check and to test and to assess the competencies, which in the beginning was quite hard to describe what are we actually assessing for if we assess the competence. So we started to create this last year's specification tables in which it was described for students actually which competencies or which skills or which knowledge was necessary to reach the minimum requirements of that assessment. So education in that time, or actually in our regular platform, all the students know the outcomes, which are described in specification tables. Those are the minimum requirements they have to meet in order to pass the assessment and in order to pass the exam and to reach the level of Bachelor of Science in Physiotherapy. So the outcomes are actually the criteria or the minimum requirements a student or an upcoming colleague has to know or has to be able to do in order to reach or to pass an assessment or an exam. In the same time, we had a lot of our assessments were based on portfolios. And in these portfolios, the student could add products which he used or which he developed during the season or during her semester as a kind of evidence of his skills or his competency. In that time, we talked quite a lot with students, and we still do. And we asked them, are those outcomes understandable? And when those outcomes are understandable, what do you think is the best way to reach those outcomes? So instead of we as teachers creating a pre-scheduled pathway, we ask upcoming colleagues about their way of their idea about reaching those outcomes. And if they can find an own way of dealing with it, perhaps with our help or by asking us the questions or presenting the dilemmas they face in order to reach those outcomes, we can have a mutual journey to reach those outcomes instead of them following a pre-scheduled path always. So in the practical teaching, it's constantly an open interaction between upcoming colleagues and the teachers about how to reach the desired outcomes. A kind of shared decision-making, which is an analogy with the physiotherapy patient management system. If we look upon the basic course of physiotherapy in the Netherlands or at our university, we talk about a four-year curriculum, which is an undergraduate, which leads to a Bachelor of Science in Physiotherapy. Of those 4 years, actually the first 2 years are mostly in-school education, simulated learning environment, and the third and fourth years are more off school within clinical practice, doing research and having an elective minor, which they can choose what to follow. The aim of the first year of the study is actually orientation and selection if the upcoming colleague really fits in within the physiotherapy program and feels also that he or she really likes to become a physiotherapist. That makes also that although the first year is kind of broad concerning physiotherapeutic topics, it's also kind of content heavy and concerned a lot with factual knowledge concerning anatomy, physiology, psychology, sociology, together with a lot of practical skills, basic practical skills. Next to those aspects, you have the intention to at least be able to examine, do the history taking and create simple, low complex intervention plans and work them out with simulated patients. They do have some kind of internships, kind of shadowing several days that they go across some stages. As 80% of the physiotherapists in the Netherlands work around in private practice, so most of the clinical places they do the shadowing is actually in private practice and also a little bit in hospitals. Our competency framework in the Netherlands is based upon the CanMed model. So we have 7 competencies like physiotherapeutic competencies, communication, organization, dealing with research, etc. In the fourth year of the course, we could divide it in 2 parts. So the first half year is mostly done with practical research. And the last part is a clinical internship, which is actually the end. And after that part, all the upcoming colleagues reach the level of an upcoming or starting physiotherapist. That last practical internship is most of the time it's in one place, so they can really develop themselves quite heavily within to the context of where they work upon. During the whole course, the complexity rises actually, and in a way you could say that in the beginning, the competency is more seen as a generic one. It's knowledge, skills and attitude. And it starts to become more and more integrative as a competency, as a holistic item. Of course, there's still some debate between the staff that some people always look upon competencies, a kind of knowledge, skills and attitude, while others look upon competencies in a very holistic way already from the beginning. To my opinion, it would be great to see competencies as holistic as possible already from the start. There's also the vision that we have in the Delta Stream or in the guided choice-based learning environment, that we see the competencies as holistic and integrational as possible and not to divide them too much between skills, knowledge and attitude. Because we notice that also for upcoming colleagues, it makes more sense to make them integrational and then they see that everything is connected towards everything.
I'm just picking up on something from the Google Doc. So am I in saying that the assessment outcomes and the kind of outcomes that you're aiming for but are the same across the alpha stream and the delta stream? Is there any difference at all in them, or are two different routes to get to the same kind of assignments and the same outcomes?
They are totally the same at the moment. But that was kind of the thing that we were working on. We had some discussions in our team in the previous years. Before we started with this whole delta stream and A stream thing, we had some discussion about competencies. Are competencies more integrated, or is a competency really knowledge, skills, and attitude? It's more about an integrated part, and it's very difficult to break them up in little pieces. But that was actually the idea that we had. The same thing is that we came to the conclusion it's not about a student who reaches his outcomes or is graduates. It's not only about knowledge, it's about becoming a physiotherapist. You have to be, it's not only not a qualification, it is also socialization and personal development. That's the reason why we came up with the Delta Stream. As we had all the assessments, plans and outcomes ready after each half year, so we took away all the education. So we talked to the students, okay, we can co-construct it. The assessment's exactly the same. So the assessment schedule is the same for the A stream and the D stream. That was also the reason why it's quite worked through the regulation with the accreditation process and the university regulations, because the assessment schedule wasn't changed. Does that answer your question, Ben?
Yeah, that 100% answers it. Thank you. I'm going to bring in Michael, because he'd put his hand up in the comments.
Just can you tell us a little bit about what an average day might look like for the student and the lecturer? So what you've described is very different to the student showing up at a certain time and sitting in a certain seat for a specified period for a module or a subject. What would a day look like for your student groups?
We have actually two rooms, because we have now a first year and a second year group working together. They have two large rooms and two small rooms in an area they can just hang out. The planning that we now have is that there's always two teachers are assigned to the group. So those two teachers, there's always two teachers present in the rooms for the students. The students, they come in when it suits them, actually. So when for example, this morning, I was a little bit late. There were five students already there at 8:30 from the two groups. Slowly they walk in up till 11 o'clock sometimes. And when they enter the room, most of the time they grab a cup of coffee and then they start to think what they do, or they communicate with each other. A lot of time they start to find out if there's a group of people who want to practice, or some of them want to go dive a little bit deeper in some literature, what their planning is. So they have, actually all of the students have their own planning system. There's no, it's whatever they came up with. So normally they start slowly till up 10:30, then most of the eight, yesterday the last one left at evening, I guess. As a teacher, you see there's a group of 35 students, that's one group, and we have a group of 35 students in the second year. When we are selected to enter Han University, we ask them, do you want to go for A stream or D stream, which kind of learning track will help you best in development? You are free actually to co-construct whatever you, in the way you like to do it, within the constraints of the system. And the constraints of the system is that we have a limited amount of places where we are, we have a limited amount of teachers availability, and we only have the outcomes. And at the same time, all the students are allowed to use all the educational material of the A stream. If I take the regular second week of the education, because I think that's the most difficult one, the first week is more to know each other, and the second week they started to figure out, okay, what I'm going to do. They have to find out for themselves, more or less, what to do. And then a lot of students come with the problem, I don't know what to do. And that's the first moment we come in, and then we say, okay, you don't know what to do. How can you solve it? And then I don't have a clue. And then we said, maybe it's nice to at least go to the electronic learning environment and to see what's out there. And then you see closely that they start to figure out what's out there. And then it's the next step. Then we ask them, you want to become a physiotherapist? What will be the first step that leads to reach? And then they start thinking, okay, you have to reach the assessment outcomes. Okay, maybe it's nice to at least have a kind of an idea what's the assessment throughout your whole education looks like and what are the competencies. So most of the students are quite aware of all the competencies and they start looking for the assessments. Then they see the list and they start to figure out what's nice. And then it's always the question, where do I need to start for each individual one? And some of them, they are more fond of starting with theoretical knowledge. Some of the students, they are more fond of practical parts. So we have constructed 31 patient cases. We have all the material is ready for them. They can find everything. But the only thing is that we didn't structure these patients in a complexity level. We only structured to the patients all in alphabetical order. So they can figure out which one they like, what is necessary. And you see this first week that some of them, they start quite quickly with anatomy because that is more concrete. Some of them wants to see more of the patient. Some of them just follow with others who are better at planning. That's kind of the idea of the of a normal day, I guess.
And so in terms of how that bit, it's not that every student in the group is working on the same kind of things at the same time. They don't have to necessarily sort of come to a plan that they're all going to do. You could have several different groups of students working on different things at any given time. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So, and that was actually, that's also for teachers quite difficult at the first beginning, because if you enter the group, you see only chaos. Everybody is doing his own thing. And some of them are just leaving the room. And in a way, some of the teachers, the students focus on certain things and that they plan ahead so that they have a plan for half a year or something. And actually, some of the students really have a plan for half a year, but also a lot of students who don't have a plan. They have an idea where to go to, and they just trial and error. So they go up and down and see what it is. And it's up to us to let it go and also to let it happen, to see, okay, just try it out and reflect on it. And that's what we do. We reflect on them. We reflect with the students every week a little bit on how are they doing. And we ask them also a little bit on, did it work out? So you did something. Was it efficient? Was it effective? Did you like it? Did you don't like it? What will you change? There's sometimes a question that we ask in between with them.
That's, yeah, really, really interesting. I'm just going to pick up on a couple of the questions in the chat. So Amanda had asked whether the students that tend to pick this route already have these kind of skills of self-directed learning and being quite, internally motivated. Do you find that there is a type of person who picks that route and that they're quite different, or is there quite a mix of kind of different approaches?
Not. They are not more self-directed in a way. The only thing, they're more curious. And a lot of students have had learning difficulties somewhere in high school or in college, somewhere else. Learning difficulties, some of them, they have problems with focusing, dyslexia, a lot of them. Some of the students were more aware that they didn't like assignments and they liked more autonomy. Mm-hmm. All the students were more, at least, willing to look upon themselves. That was the big difference that we saw.
Great. And so, and just to pick up on sort of Dave's question there about, was there a particular reason why the outcomes and the assessment schedule was kept the same? I think that's probably something that, looking at it, you're thinking about trying to keep the curriculum aligned. And it seems like with such a big shift to the teaching, there's clearly a bit of a risk there that you kind of lose the constructive alignment from that to the assessment. So was there a particular reason why that had to be the case?
Yeah. The moment when we started, we have a lot of regulations, of course, like in every country. So we have the accreditation or we have the exam committee, which is focusing on everything. Everybody said it was actually impossible to do it. But because we were able to let the exam regulations be the same and only change the teaching, we could do it kind of below radar kind of teaching. But the only problem is we have to keep the assessment schedule alive and the same, and also to convince kids how to do it. Because it was a kind of a problematic approach when we started. It was 4 years ago. It was with a group meeting. We had a team base, and we came to the conclusion, okay, perhaps we can change a little bit in the curriculum. Instead of having only one level difference can choose their development, and also teachers can choose what they like best and what serves best their teacher needs. And the only thing that came up quite quickly that everybody said that new system, the D-stream, was not doable and the students won't get their results and blah, blah, blah. So we decided, okay, let's just try it out if we can manage that and totally different kind of teaching or education, actually non-teaching, the same results. And then we came to the conclusion already after a year that the same results were reached no matter what kind of education you used. That's the reason also in the beginning that we had to keep on with this assessment schedule. We tried to change it. That goes, then we go more into a bureaucratic part. It's the whole idea of the assessment is not that an assessor tells you you're right, that you are competent. So the moment that the student thinks that I am competent, he can go to the assessor and show the assessor that he's competent based on his argumentation. That's the direction we want to go.
I think it's getting through the kind of practicalities of making this kind of change. Obviously, it's really hard, isn't it, to just do a wholesale change. So it's really interesting to hear how you kind of got a clear idea of where you want to go, but you've got to work within them as it is.
It was very good, and it's important that it's kind of rigid in a way, I guess. But also it takes time to change it, and sometimes you just have to show first, and it takes a lot of effort to go there. Especially, I think that from the students was kind of brave to enter this experiment.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, I was just going to pick up on the question from Anestis, who was asking whether you feel that this stream is theoretically for everybody, or are there some students who it wouldn't be for? And I guess just to add to that question, are there some students who have started on that stream and you've suggested that they need to move off of it? And equally, have you had some students who started on the A stream who you've then thought might be better over and have sort of switched them that way?
Yes and no. It's a kind of a difficult question because we're still working upon it. There's always the possibility to change. We said that every student can change once, at least once, from A to D or from D to A. We have had some students who changed. When we started the first time, we started with the second year's groups. They had this regular education in the first year, and they started D-stream in the second year. And some of them, they didn't really know. That whole group continued in D-stream. Last year, we started with a group of a new group of first-year students who never had regular education. Those students from the regular group, because they want to go back to a very structured way and also to follow the line of the teacher, and they get a little bit annoyed that everybody was doing his own thing. From the present groups, actually, the ones who started in the first year, nobody changed to the A stream. All of them stayed in the D stream, and even so, more students entered the D stream coming from the A stream. Now, to go back to the question of Anestis, I think in a way it suits for all students. All the material and the learning assignments, the learning path, available for the students in the D-stream. Students in the D-stream, they can just follow the whole scheduled program, what the A-stream students do.
I'm keen to come back to Dave's question about what would the influences. So Dave asked whether Jacques Rancière was an influence on the philosophy. I don't know, Dave, whether you wanted to come in and expand on that point and kind of put that question.
When you were talking just about the curriculum, it really struck me how Jacques Rancière's work in the 70s, I don't know whether you know his book, The Ignorant Schoolmaster, which is a parable about a Flemish teacher in the 17th century who gets expelled to northern Belgium to teach a bunch of students who don't speak Flemish, and his only text is Greek mythology in Greek, and he sends them away for a year to learn this book. And of course, they come back speaking Greek. And Rancière used that as a sort of parable for a change in the French education system in the 70s. And he basically, one of the problems with education is that the student has to come to the subject through the mind of the tutor. And it would be better if the tutor got out of the way and left the student and worked to try and bring the student as close as possible to the subject matter. And it sounded a lot like that's what you were doing. And I wondered whether Rancière or others like Rancière had been an influence on you.
Well, I haven't heard about the Rancière book, but it sounds quite interesting. And it was a phenomenon of Bowden and Martin and Salier. The object of research is the relation between the phenomenon and a subject. We tried to figure out that actually the idea of education is helping the relationship between the student and the profession, or the thing, the content that he learns, but actually is the profession as a whole. And actually, what you say, to have the teacher out of the way and just as a guide or facilitator instead of the one who's bringing it, the idea that we came across at that time, and it was in the same line with Siguda Mitra, The Hole in the Wall, in kids who learned to work with the computer without a teacher present. We work quite a lot with behavioral change as a physiotherapist. And most of the teachers in the D stream, at least, we came to the conclusion that behavioral change is also something with learning, actually always possession of the learner. And if it's the possession of the learner, we can't actually change the learner, because the learner only changes, so we can only invite the person. Well, if that's the case with physiotherapy, so we can't change the person, we have our hands actually tied on our back, and we have to invite them and to encourage them or facilitate. And if we think that we can't into a student, because then he doesn't learn, he chooses how to learn, or she chooses how to learn, be more humble in it, and to imagine that we have our hands on our back, and we should invite and challenge or whatever to do, that the learner can make the steps. And I think that most of the learners can do quite a lot themselves. And if we just give them opportunities and provide them with challenges and a challenging learning environment, and at the same time having freedom to choose and to be autonomous. Because that's also the thing that we found out with students, that a lot of times the students come to us at the end of the day and said, oh, today was an awful day because I haven't done anything. Tomorrow will be a better day, and that it will be efficient or effective. And that was quite surprising after the first weeks. And the same thing, that one of the comments that we had from one of the other students, oh, it's so nice, I don't have breaks anymore. So I can just, if I'm in the flow, I can just continue working. It was quite nice.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you. I think, you know, and I think what's coming through, I think, really clearly is this link between actually what kind of physiotherapist we're hoping that these students might become, and really how that the teaching method is trying to reflect that. And I think that's really interesting. I'm going to come. Ken's asked a boring practical question, which I had down to ask too. So we'll come to that in a second. I'm just going to give Michael the chance to come in with his question now, and then we'll just talk about some of the practicalities, actually, which I think probably are interesting to most of us too.
This is actually related to the question that Ken has just asked. Yes, most of us are not going to be in a position where we're going to make kind of radical sweeping changes to the curriculum. So I just wanted to know, do you have any practical suggestions for lecturers who are interested in this approach, interested in this philosophy, but who are not going to be able to roll it out at the scale that you've done? So, you know, what are the kind of small implications for practice that, you know, the rest of us might be able to use in our own teaching?
What we found out, what was actually necessary for the student, was a challenging learning environment. Resources that what we created. Research was electronic research, that all the material that was necessary need to be available. So we had we created actually from all the learning books and textbooks that we learned and used in our education, actually most of them are now available as an ebook. Through to our library, the students can access almost everything directly from wherever they are. We, during the last 4 years, most of the lectures that has been given and still are giving about a lot of topics were filmed and videotaped. So all the lectures are actually available on video. We also have a lot of knowledge clips already available for the students. Actually, all the cases during all the years we put also online in written, and some of them are videotaped cases. We have all the assessments are open, so they know which assessment is there and what are the indicators. Or actually, all the information of them from the first till up to the fourth year, all kind of digital material, podcast like the Visual Matters podcast we use quite a lot, so show them which direction they can go.
That's really clear in terms of, so there's all these resources that are there, which are kind of open and the students can access them as they kind of perceive that they need to. And in terms of the kind of cost, is the cost sort of per student roughly the same in the Alpha stream and the Delta stream?
No, it's actually the same cost. Normally, we increase the number of students in the class. Normally, we have around 21. And we increased to 35. Larger group of students connected, we could have add up more teaching hours. So in the guiding system or in the facilitating system, it was easier. So that's why the course were actually the same. And it's the same when I just see the question of Kenneth about the teaching space and practical room. We have two large rooms. It's cramped if you are with 35 people actually. We have two of those rooms, and we have two smaller rooms, I think 5x6, those are the two smaller rooms, physiotherapeutic practical teaching rooms. That's the places that we use.
So I just wondered, Ken, whether you wanted to come in and just talk a little bit about how you were trying to integrate the kind of learning in the modules on your new program. And I was just interested to see if there was any kind of between your approach and the sort of thing and that you've been talking about.
Sure, yeah, thanks for offering me that opportunity. So I'm leading the development of a new MSc course at UCLan. We've just been, in fact, 2 days ago, got approval from the HCTC, so we're due to start in September next year. So this is a 2-year accelerated physio course for students who already have a first degree. And avoid the traditional sort of siloing of material, of learning experiences. So it's nowhere near as radical as what you've been describing, Houston. It sounds really, really interesting and innovative. Unless we had, and this isn't revolutionary, I've seen it in other universities. We have four themes which run through each of the 6 modules that we have. And we have these 4 themes, competencies for physiotherapy, personal and professional development, society and public health, and research. So the idea is to use a sort of case-based approach within each module to let students explore in a way that hopefully is contextualized to the clinical setting from the start. And the other aspect that we've built into to hope to facilitate this integration of learning and knowledge development is the placements, the clinical placements, most of which, about 2/3 of the clinical placements are part-time, typically 2 days a week on placement and the rest of the time university-based. And again, trying to break down these silos between learning, the real learning as students often see it in the clinical setting.
It is really interesting what you say, and I think that it is that integration of clinical practice and in-school learning which makes, I think, most of it. And as also what you say, it's if you have people, students with previous knowledge, you want to value that system, that they have their own possibility, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And this is a pre-registration, so students coming in with an existing degree, and I've argued for having quite inclusive criteria there. So it doesn't have to be a sort of traditional or related degree as such. I'd be happy to welcome students with a degree in art, for instance, as long as they show the potential to engage with the learning. So, and they bring lots of different experiences and values. I think this sort of method of learning where it is more student-led and they have experiences and that are more varied and rich, I suppose.
I also see that we have some of the learners who have had previous education, some of them in accountancy or human resource management, and it really helped them if we value them and see if they can bridge or transfer one to the other. Yeah, and the other thing that you just said also with practicals, because that was one of the challenges we had, because we have so many students with this 180, and if the 180 goes into the practical environment, the Netherlands is not such a big country. And we have 12 universities in the Netherlands who are separated geographically around the country. And in our area, we can maybe 180, 200 placements for practical placements for students. So what happened now in these, because we don't have a scheduled classes, students are allowed to bring in patients whenever they think it's easy or helpful. Just-in-time patients who are entering and who kind of mix up also with this practical parts. And instead of having that, maybe that's also important to understand that the Dutch system, physiotherapists, around 80% work in private practice. We hardly have any more physiotherapists working in hospitals. Most of the hospitals kind of served by physiotherapist in this vicinity of the neighborhood or something. So a lot of patients actually come in now to the university also with questions or those kind of things. And students constantly go out to serve for practical placement because we don't have enough. We had to deal with some to find another solution with it. If you can have part-time practical placement, I would really love. It was a little bit difficult to organize, and then we decided from if we can't organize it, just see if this is in a way, and that seems to happen.
Interesting. So I was explaining the Van Merenboer kind of concepts around how to get complex learning. There's some stuff that's been related to physiotherapy in regards to that. So it's about getting the kind of key complexity of the learning activity to happen at the right time, having done the sort of groundwork for that, and as you say, moving that onto the responsibility of the students or that sort of group of learners to think about what to see at that point. It's more likely that the learning is going to happen at the right time rather than have a placement maybe a year or two after you've kind of learned about in the classroom. Is that how it's worked out?
Yeah, it was kind of the influence. We decided long time ago, there was decided in our system that the students will take two times half a year a practical internship, which is quite long. But then students won't see the whole variety of patients or clients or within the realm of both illness and more health-related things. So we thought, well, if students are allowed to bring in patients, then it can be more interesting. What's happening actually at the first year, they first started actually with just a patient. And it goes from neurological patients to complex pain, rheumatology, cardiorespiratory, a lot of musculoskeletal, an whole range of patients actually enter. And not by that they choose this kind of patient, it's more like, oh, there's a patient around, is it allowed to come in? And then they see at least the process of physiotherapy, what it is to do history taking, what's an assessment, what is goal setting, what is shared decision making, those kind of items are firstly coming across, and then they start also to wonder, and they get more interested also in physiology and in psychology or sociology, and what's the habits, what's the beliefs of the patients. So a lot of things happen actually, but just having a random patient getting in. And in the second year, we see that they are more looking for specific kind of patients that they think, oh, I want to see more of these problems or these kind of questions.
So I'm conscious of the time. I was just going to come back to Amanda's question about the nature of assessments, whether they were predominantly practical or written or whether there was anything else different and innovative that you were doing. And then we'll try and wrap up on any kind of take-home message for other people, which links into Anestis's question after that. So just on the nature of the assessments first, yeah, if that's okay.
The assessment, in the first year, we started actually with a digital question mark concerning factual knowledge about physiology, physiotherapy, anatomy, pathology, and psychology, and also a skills assessment. That's in the first 8 weeks. After half year, they have a performance assessment in which they get a simulated patient. They have to perform a history taking and an assessment and the start of an intervention. Next to that one, they also construct a digital portfolio in which they show with reflections in it some kind of products like a case report, all the things that they have done. And afterwards, they're getting each half year, they have at least a performance assessment and a digital portfolio. Second year, we still have this question mark assessments. Third and fourth year, that's more digital portfolio assessments with a little bit of practical parts in it.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, so it's that same kind of range of different assessment approaches that I guess probably most of us would grow. Okay, so then I think just to finish, I think this is a bit of a follow-up to what Michael was asking around whether this is an approach that could be implemented if we're not going to do the wholesale change. And Anestis had asked whether you think it would be meaningful to start with this just on one course or on one assignment. So we've obviously not done anything quite as radical as the change that you've made, but we have tried to shift. And where there's been a shift in the style of teaching towards a more sort of active inquiry-based type approach, then it was that it was definitely easier to start that, as you say, right from the beginning. So this is how we are trying to become as a kind of course program, rather than and I know one of the other courses here, the occupational therapy course, had a similar thing where they hadn't started that in the first year and then tried to introduce it a bit, but came up with kind of more sort of problems and kind of barriers from the student's perspective in terms of trying to get them to sort of buy into this way of learning, which sounds like kind of similar to what you're saying, that if you're going to try it in a small way, doing it at the end where we maybe should be trying to sort of challenge and undermine some of the consistency of approach that we've had through.
Yeah, actually, and also what Dave Nichols talked about, he said, well, it's more like developing codependence and sharing instead of only autonomy. This kind of codependence with learners and teachers, and afterwards you have to move backwards to a very kind of authority-based, not for some of them. That's mostly think about the consequence, of course, what will happen in the mind of students, of the learner, if you change it backwards. The idea that you do different things. Educational has different meanings. Sometimes it's very more open. If that's the case, then it can be very helpful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for all of that conversation, Joost. It's been really interesting to hear about, and to everyone else who's also chipped in with questions and comments and information about what they've been doing. So open the floor once more to see if there was any kind of final comments or questions or anything else that anybody had.
I want to thank you very much also for giving this opportunity, and I guess that upon physiotherapy and education, and we love development, and we want to strive for getting the best for all of the people. And I guess by sharing and co-constructing, that means it's more about knowing than knowledge in itself. More easy to deal with uncertainty and disagreements between things because it's more situational. So thank you very much.
So we hope that you enjoyed listening into this conversation and that it has stimulated some thoughts about your own teaching. Please do remember that the Google Doc that's linked to this conversation is still open. You can find that on the Google Plus community. So if you have further thoughts or questions, then please do add them in there. Also, if you've got a topic that you think it would be good for us to discuss on Inbeta, either in the next session or at a later date after that, then please do let us know, as we're going to be putting suggested topics to the vote within the community to see what people would like to talk about.
And please remember that this community and approach to collaboration is a work in progress, so we'd really appreciate any feedback you have that will help us improve the experience. You can leave comments on SoundCloud, or you can join the Google Plus community and participate there.